Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Joining me today on the other line is Fear the Sword's news editor and a member of the 120 Sports team. It's Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going?
It's going great. Suffering through probably the worst stretch the Cavs have played since before they traded for JR and Shump. So there have been more fun times in Cavs land, but on a personal note, things are A-okay.
That's good. As long as you're doing good, you know, that matters more than what's going on with the team.
I'm not sure that's the case. I think the team affects the world's general joy at a much higher rate.
Well, that's because our respective Twitter feeds become kind of dystopian, Mad Maxian freakout zones every time something goes bad.
Sure.
And then it's just like we're talking about something trivial, and people are saying that Tristan Thompson's overpaid. I mean, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's a weird. I think it's just these are just kind of the beats that are just going to get hit. Every time it goes bad for any stretch, whether it's two games or 8 games, or it's just always those are going to be the things that get talked about, and who cares?
So there's a lot going on with the Cavs right now. I ended up waiting to do a little Kings recap just because of the timing of my life after that game. So if you're looking for that recap, we're going to cover that game here, but we're going to do sort of a state of the Cavs today. There's just a lot happening, as Carter has alluded to, with the Cavs right now. Kind of not surprisingly, this is another kind of drama-filled stretch for the team. They've lost 6 of their last 8. LeBron is leading the team in minutes. They kind of fall apart every time LeBron isn't on the floor, and Kyrie and Love kind of have to run things for a little bit. They do have 3 All-Stars, which is nice. They're still one of the league's 3 best teams record-wise. Then you have LeBron James throwing some serious sort of shade at the organization. Then you have the Brian Windhorst story about how him and the team are getting along. You have David Griffin on the record. Something that I don't think has actually been talked about enough is him responding to LeBron after LeBron's public comments about that, and maybe the organization being sort of satisfied and content with where they're at. David Griffin says, "I'm seeing contentness on the court. I'm not seeing that from us." So there is some friction.
Loved
there.
It. Yeah. Drama.
Yeah, it's drama. And at the same time, we have to just note that it could be worse because the Chicago Bulls are literally talking about each other in post-game interviews, and Rajon Rondo is just burning the world down with Instagram captions. So it could be worse. Because it didn't seem like the team is actually annoyed by where it's like. I've been in the locker room before when it is bad mood time and everyone's like very frustrated and annoyed, and we've seen that from afar the past couple years. This really isn't that. It's not the full DEFCON 5 doomsday kind of thing that we've seen in the past. I think it's not great, but it's not quite that severe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're spending time in the locker room, but I do think just like to some extent, like not having that the specter of not winning a title with LeBron in a second run in Cleveland, or ever, you know, never winning a title in Cleveland, I think really hung over this team and this fan base. So, and with that not there anymore, I think a big part of this is just like short-term hand-wringing irritation. Like, I think the team's annoyed. I think the fan base is annoyed. I know I am annoyed just watching this team half-ass through things and not be able to get into sets because only two guys on the team can dribble. I'm annoyed, but there is no existential dread just hanging, looming over the team, which I think is really important to note. It doesn't feel like, oh, no, like, we're never going to win now. It's more like, oh, well, this sucks currently.
Yeah, and I think it does help, too, that the Raptors are sort of floundering a bit. The Celtics aren't quite capitalizing on this. I mean, the Wizards have been the best team in the East for, like, 2 weeks because they've just been winning every game, and the Cavs
are just them and the Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, trust the process forever, my man, and raise those cats. But
what's crazy is that they're freaking killing teams still, even when Embiid doesn't play.
And also know that Joel Okafor is not playing either. I'm just saying.
Well, that's probably good news.
I'm just saying. But with the Cavs, I think the best way to sort of look at this, I think, is in a broader sense, right? Like, I don't think when we get to the finals, assuming they get there, that we're gonna look back at the stretch and say, "Oh my God, the Cavs! We should have seen this coming because the Cavs lost those 6 out of 8 games in January to start the year." Like, I don't think we're going to necessarily be talking about this, but I think some of the symptoms that are happening right now that we're seeing sort of pop up are sort of part of the journey of this team. If you haven't read it already, Brian Winters from ESPN wrote a story that you should definitely go read about how LeBron has friction with the front office because of he doesn't feel like they're fully committed to the spending of money and stuff like that. In getting all the guys that they need. And that's the sort of friction. Dan Gilbert's supposedly frustrated by this. You know, we had the public comments as well that we've talked about. I think that is sort of interesting because I think one thing that I am certainly guilty of, I'm not going to say this for Cavs Twitter as a whole, is the Cavs won the title, and I think in my head I kind of just assumed, okay, the process there worked, right? Like, LeBron James, you won a title. Kevin Love gets vindicated, Kyrie hits the big shot, yada, yada, yada. Some of the details that I think we have seen sort of come out, and then sort of thinking about how the Cavs have managed their assets over the past couple years, and how they've managed resting guys because of how they've managed their assets, I think it's sort of more relevant right now than it's ever been. There's the one nugget from the first Windhorse story this week about, that I think I'm pretty sure I sent a screenshot of this to you, pulled it out of the story and sent it to you. They had a thing 2 summers ago where Matthew Dellavedova was pretty willing to sign a 3-year deal for $4 million per. That, if looking at the math of his deal then versus what he ended up getting, that actually would have been $2 million, only $2 million more pre-tax than what he's actually making per year with the Bucks. And then you had the thing with Timofey Mozgov would have been willing to sign a deal for $9 million per when he's making a bunch more than that now. And, of course, hindsight is 2020 in Timo. This is Timo that was coming off the great half year with the Cavs. Where the Cavs are at now, yes, those guys didn't play big roles in the finals last year, but they're both rotation guys. Dele in particular, I think, would be very useful on this team, regardless how he's playing with the Bucks right now. And I would argue that, like, the $4 million, considering where we all knew the cap was headed and the Cavs' limited ability to go get guys, Dele on a $4 million per year deal seems sort of like a weird miss on an asset. Like, I know the Cavs spent a ton of money that summer, but in the grand scheme of things, knowing you could lock that guy up for that low of a price and knowing you have someone you could probably flip him if you needed to get somebody else or to clear space or whatever a year or two down the road because that contract would be so cheap, that just seems weird to me. And I think you are seeing a team right now that is sort of top-heavy. If you had Dele for the $4 million per, you would some of the issues that you see now with the Cavs, I don't necessarily think they're as big of an issue because he was a big part of those bench lineups last year. He was Kyrie's backup more so than Mo Williams ever was. I think those are like things like that where we are. Like, David Griffin deserves an A+ for getting the Cavs where they are now. It is a hard, hard job to maximize LeBron James. But, like, not getting the assets you need and then signing a lot of older guys who can't necessarily play, like Birdman in particular, because even before ACL, I don't think he was playable. I think that sort of leads you to where you're at right now more so than the team isn't willing to spend the money.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think everyone would agree that that Delly for $4 million a year would be preferable to the current situation. And I think it's really important we make very sure we're not doing the David Griffin isn't good at his job tour. Absolutely. I know you're not doing that.
Yeah, but I just want to make sure. Yeah, like
the tenor of this podcast is going to feel a little negative.
It is.
Because Cavs aren't playing well right now, and it's the state of the Cavs. So we're going to talk about what's going on right now.
And just a quick note. Yeah, nobody to be clear real quick. David Griffin, if you were going to ask me to give him a grade, it's an A+. Like, he built a roster that won a title, and he's, to the best of his ability on the path they took, has maximized LeBron James. I don't think there is any issue with what I have. I think there are little things, but it is nothing that really takes away from the job he's done.
Nobody's perfect yet. He's great. We're probably going to criticize Lou a little bit. He's amazing. Lou is not a problem in the organization, you know. I just wanted to lay that groundwork.
It's a good call. Good call.
So Griffin, he has a lot of pressures. I think it's worth noting. He's got pressure from LeBron, who has more power than any player in any organization to do certain things. He's got pressure from Dan Gilbert to do what LeBron wants in the most financially responsible manner he can. And then he has a responsibility to be the long-term architect of the team, because LeBron is always going to think short-term. So, and he should. I get it. I get why LeBron would think short-term. He doesn't care about Chetty Osman. Sorry. There's no way.
We're actually going to get to him. And I'm glad you sort of dropped that little foreshadow there.
So, Griffin has a hard job, but there are things that he's had to do and that he's done that have made things harder. Not signing Dally that deal makes things harder. Honestly, I get a lot of pushback whenever I bring this up, but burning two first-round picks on Timofey Mozgov, who played 1.5 seasons for you, is tough. It just is.
Yeah, because I know people will say, like, it was the thing I always got blowback for on Twitter when I critiqued the two first-round picks thing is one of them really wasn't their first-round pick. It's still an asset you controlled.
Yeah, they could have had that pick for a different deal later on. And, like, the fact of the matter is I think he helped save their season, so it's hard to critique the move at the time. And I don't really think I will. But just knowing that this was a guy who spent 1.5 seasons there and was really only helpful for half a season and a playoff run to the finals where he played very well. So half a season and a playoff run. Two first-round picks was a pretty steep price for that. So the Cavs are a little asset poor right now. And also, I've talked about a lot on Twitter, I think – the fact that the Korver deal, they used about half of the Varejao trade exception and then also sent Dunleavy and Mo Williams to the Hawks in exchange for new smaller exceptions.
And then did the little pick swap so they don't have a first-round pick this year. They will have one 2018.
I was fine with the pick swap.
Yeah, but I agree. I'm just saying, noting that they got rid of the pick.
Of course. Doing those two things, doing both, taking him into the trade exception and sending out $6 million in salary makes doing more deals really, really hard.
Yeah, so like on that note, you look at where the Cavs are right now, just so people are aware, the Cavs financially are like a very top-heavy roster. Mo Williams is realistically their best financial trade chip, along with Dunleavy, especially because I just assumed Dunleavy was going to get bought out, but he's playing with the Hawks, whatever. Look at the Cavs roster right now. They're not going to trade LeBron, obviously. They're not going to trade Kyrie. They're not going to trade Kevin Love. You're not going to trade Tristan Thompson. I know people keep saying that on Twitter. Like, why would they do that? They're not going to trade JR. And I think it'd be actually sort of hard to trade JR Smith. So you get into these situations where Korver is an expiring contract. Now, you're not going to trade him because you just got him, and he's at about a little over $5 million. Richard Jefferson probably has no trade value at $2.5 million. Like, he'd be a filler if you really were going to get somebody, but I just don't see how that happens, right? Fry's making $7 million, almost $8 million, but you kind of need him because you're so thin up front. I mean, it's just the reality of it. So realistically, your best trade assets right now are a future first-round pick, which I'm not 100% sure what year they could actually trade a pick in. I think it's like 2021 or something like that. It's something a little bit far off. And Amon Shumpert, and then Chetty Osman. And Amon Shumpert's making about $10 million. I'm not exactly sure what his trade value would be either. I honestly couldn't tell you what Chetty's trade value would be. I've talked to a couple, I always try to talk to scouts when I'm at games, just because I ask some kind of dumb questions, and sometimes I get dumb looks from that. Like, it's just the reality of it.
They know more than us.
Yeah, and they know, and I'm going to talk to somebody who is kind of has the pulse in these things. A couple of them have, I've got like mixed reviews of what Osman's value actually is. It's not something I'm like going to throw into a full on, you know, like this is like the state of Chetty Osman thing, because I don't think it's really worth that. But I don't think it's exactly clear what his value would be to every team. I think it depends on the team. And honestly, to be, and this hits on something that I think the Cavs would be smart to do. I understand they're not just going to spend money on a young guy to eat up a roster spot and develop. Like, I don't, and I can understand doing that, not doing that because you are paying a large tax bill. I kind of think that, like, if you think he can play next year, and I know he's young and all this stuff, he's cost-controlled labor, and he's younger and has room to grow. I think there is value in that. Like, we see the one thing that I think the Spurs and the Warriors have both done better than the Cavs, and they've done it over longer periods of time. They aren't sort of building on a condensed timeline like the Cavs have. And those are, and the Spurs in particular are world-class at developing guys. They've developed Danny Green. They've developed Jonathan Simmons. They've done a really good job of finding young guys that can play, right? Like, DeJounte Murray for the Spurs, who is a Clutch Sports client, by the way, has been great for them. He's the youngest, I believe I read today that he was the youngest player since Tony Parker to score 24 points in a game for the Spurs. And he's looks like an NBA player right now. McCaw hasn't, you know, lit the world on fire, but he's a playable guy for the Warriors. I think Cade Felder's done some things that are nice, and he has shown flashes of being useful. But it's not even close to being that level, I don't think. I think he looks lost at times. There was a play against the Kings where he really just needed to catch the ball, and he just flubbed the whole play, and it resulted in a turnover. When LeBron was coming down the other end of the floor, and it just was sort of deflating. And you don't have these other guys to turn to. Like Jordan McRae, it's telling that when Tyronn Lue is saying, we need to adjust the rotation and figure out what works, Jordan McRae was the only guy that didn't play a single minute against the Kings.
Yep, he is not in the plans, it doesn't seem.
He is literally not in the plans. So, like, I think there's just something, the idea that, like, we are at where we are because of the condensed timeline, because of LeBron, because of all this stuff. And I think we're seeing, to be honest with you, I think the biggest thing I have is that this is a product of that roster building style.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I really think the roster's fine.
I don't disagree with you. Just, like, we're being more negative again on this podcast because things are a little bit crappy right now, and I think there are some things that we can't just always say the most positive things about a team. Like, yeah, it's just not fair.
But what I'm trying to say is I think the roster is fine. I just think that they have some weird limitations right now. And one thing I wouldn't do is I would not trade Shumpert. He's not technically a two-way player, because he's not a great offensive player, but he's okay at offense, you know, passable, and he's a good defender. And if the Cavs trade him, they will be down to zero defenders on their bench. And I just don't think that's a smart play. I think the eight or nine guys they can go to war with right now are good. I just think that they need to add someone who can handle the ball a little bit. And I think that might come during buyout season. One disappointment I have, and I don't know if you agree, I think it's very disappointing they haven't been trying guys out on 10-day contracts. They have an open roster spot. There's no downside. And, you know, I'm not saying the guys in the free agent market are great, But why not? What's the harm in trying out some warm bodies that are bigs?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I think there are guys in the D League that are playing at a pretty decent level that I think would be worth look. I mean, I think a year from now, that'll actually be easier for the Cavs to do because of the two-way contracts, because of the expanded rosters. Like, I think that'll be something that we can actually look at and maybe push for that more. Like, my kind of thing is, like, I'm a big defender of the James Jones honorary roster spot because of what he is in the locker room.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Like, I understand that he is, like, not really a playable rotation guy at age 36 where he's at now. But that guy, everyone in the locker room loves that guy. He is a huge reason why Kevin Love ended up working in Cleveland. Like, it is hard to quantify that with any statistics. It is impossible to quantify that with basketball statistics. But, like, that guy connects the locker room, and he's, like, someone that can hold LeBron accountable and can kind of be there and be a trustworthy thing. I don't think Chris Anderson quite falls in that category, but I think there's room to critique a guy who is 38, who hadn't been good in a couple of years, and was coming off an injury, that you sign him, and that's, like, your fourth big. Like, I think there are some concerns with that. I have concerns with that, you know?
I think you really should only have one memorial James Jones guy on the James Jones memorial roster spot on the roster. Having two just doesn't work. And I know that having him, keeping his spot, keeping him on the roster, is there for trade reasons, for salary adding reasons, I guess. That's the line. But it's like, he makes like $970,000. Like, is he really going to, I mean, I don't know. It just feels kind of weird. Like, there's not a ton of trades he's going to swing that I think they're going to be doing. So, I don't know. It just, obviously there's the reporting about about LeBron kind of being at odds with Dan Gilbert about spending, and not bringing in guys, not filling that roster spot, turning the Korver trade into a cost cutting move. It does it starts to kind of sound like, are they trying to, is Dan pinching his pockets a little bit?
The funny thing about that is that I don't know this to be true, and this is just sort of connecting dots a little bit. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a big New York Times business profile on Dan Gilbert over the weekend. And he's basically making, like, more money than ever. Like, Dan Gilbert's, like, making money unbelievably right now.
Yeah, like, he's rich.
He's very, very rich. And I kind of wonder if, like, LeBron, who is very aware of everything, like, sees that and is like, what the heck, Dan? You know?
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, like, it's not, because of the constraints, and this is why, like, I kind of don't always, like when people are like, GM LeBron. It is not like a simple thing to just get on the phone and go get a guy who's a $8 million a year player or something like that, or a $10 million a year player, and add him to your team. Like, it is really hard to make those adjustments. And when you're the Cavs and you have, like you said, cashed in that half of that trade exception, you did the thing last year to get Fry. Like, the Anderson Varejao chip was the big chip and everything. Like, all these things that you've already done, you are left with not a lot of ways to go out and get players. It's just the reality of the roster.
Yeah, I mean, he's a wizard, don't get me wrong, but I just think using both the Moe and Dunleavy contracts plus the Varejao, because if they had just absorbed Korver into the trade exception, they would have 4.5 from the Varejao exception, or use $6 million combining Dunleavy and Moe in a different deal. Or if they just sent Dunleavy and Moe out, same thing, right? They would have the whole Varejao exception left. But they used both, so, which saves the Cavs money to get an upgrade on their roster, but it does limit what else they can do. I really think this team is going, any more changes on this roster will be through free agency. I really think that. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I just, there are certainly guys in a totally trade machine-y sort of way that I think would make sense. But those deals are so much easier to just do when it takes 10 seconds to do them on the trade machine. And when you think of it yourself, than it is to actually convince another team to do a deal with you. Like, I think that gets lost a lot, to be honest with you. Like, trading is hard. Like, making those deals and getting teams to negotiate with you and things can be a very tricky thing. Especially when you don't just have a lot of things to offer them. The Cavs don't have anything right now that would convince some team to give them a useful player. I do agree with you. I think you wait for the buyout market. You're certainly going to compete with other guys and other teams. Like, you're going to compete with the Clippers. Like, let's say PJ Tucker gets bought out by the Suns. You're competing against the Clippers for him. If Tyson Chandler gets bought out, your other teams would want him. And those are just purely speculative names. Like, we don't know exactly who's going to get bought out yet. I also think you can hedge against this a year from now by being a little bit more proactive and finding the right younger guys and drafting guys and trying to find guys you can develop in Canton to kind of hedge these spots. Like, you can help avoid that in a year. Like, I think you can do that.
I don't know. I just think, like, I think you just need to survive till we get to buyout season. When's the trade deadline? Like, mid-February?
Excuse me?
When is the trade deadline? Is it mid-February?
February 23rd, I believe.
Okay, so late February. But if you just survive to there, guys are going to get bought out. They always are. And then your goal is to convince them to come on. But in the meantime, I really do think they should be using these 10 days to try out guys who can maybe handle the ball a little bit, maybe a two-way defender on the wing, or kind of a garbage man defensive big. Just stuff that low-risk stuff that, I think part of being a team like the Cavs are, being very capped out and being, not having a ton of trade assets left, is that you have to take a lot of swings. You have to try a bunch of stuff and see what works.
I would agree.
And I wish that they would be doing that with these 10 days. If you follow me on Twitter at all, you'll probably laugh, but like, Quincy Acey was just right out there. A good garbage man, athletic big that with a little bit of scoring ability, and Brooklyn scooped him up, and he's been playing pretty well for them based on what I've read.
Yeah.
There are playable guys. You just have to find these diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, I mean, if you're to kind of throw out a couple names that I think would work, if you want to just look at Canton, I watched their game this week, and I don't watch nearly as much D League as I'd like to just because of time in my life to watch everything, but Chris Evans was pretty impressive. He's a 6'8 forward who can move pretty well. That guy could work. I'm still in the Quinn, the Quinn Cook thing fascinates me for kind of dumb reasons, because it's like very clear that if they actually wanted him, they could have just signed him at this point. But he's like,
yeah, it's very clear,
but it's like
that Quinn Cook is not going to be a member of the Cavs.
No,
because they have not shown any interest in bringing him on, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I've said this on the podcast, like I believe 100 times by this point, but they would have probably signed him if not paid over $2 million to get Kay Felder. If the organization as a whole wanted Quinn, it was cool with Quinn Cook. Roosevelt Jones is another guy I think would be worth some minutes. And like a guy like Bronte Weber, like he played in the NBA last year and did some nice things for the Heat, and he's literally killing it for the Sioux Skyforce, I think, right now. He's playing really well, and there are guys like that. Ray McCollum's even playing well in the D League, And then Larry Sanders just freaking tweeted that he wants to be back in the NBA, and that has its own set of things too. But like, there are guys
just try
out there.
Stuff. That's just all. Stuff. I think that's all they need to do.
And it's not our money, which like I always have to just say, like, it isn't our money. So it's easier for us to just like say that. But I believe
so okay with telling Dan Gilbert to spend more money.
Yeah,
like that is the one thing I think is so weird that we do as sports fans is doing the they're already pretty heavy in the luxury tax and. It's a really expensive roster. It's like, dude, these guys are billionaires.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if
an extra paying $8 million
for a stadium is pony up a little bit more.
Yeah, paying $8 million more for a $2 million player, I don't give a damn. I'm sorry, like it's ridiculous to me. Like I said this while I was talking to some other people last night. Do you know how much money Jerry Reinsdorf bought the Bulls for?
I do not.
I believe it was like $19 million.
That's very cheap for the Chicago
Bulls.
He
could sell that franchise for $1 billion now. That is a hilarious return on investment. These franchises appreciate in value so much that anyone crying – I don't care if you're the richest or the most expensive team in the league. Crying poor does not make any sense to me.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, it's just and I do get it in the environment where, okay, like for example, like the Bulls shouldn't just spend recklessly, right? They're not a title contender. They are going to get if they spend recklessly, they won't have any flexibility and then will end up hamstringing themselves. The Cavs are already where they want to be. They just are making moves on the margins at this point. And right. They won't have flexibility whether they sign a guy for, you know, for if they cut Birdman and sign a guy for the minimum or not. So it's all up to Dan Gilbert being willing to spend that money.
No, you're right. You're 100% right.
I don't like to be like super crazy, you know, like over the top with it. But it's just like, man, I just don't have like it is so weird to see the sentiment from NBA Twitter where it's like, oh. LeBron is the most expensive roster in the league and he's crying. Well, dude, he wants his team to be better and he knows how valuable he is. And if he senses that Dan Gilbert is tightening up his purse strings when that was a prerequisite for his return to Cleveland, was that he not do that, he's going to cause some problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back to LeBron's time in Miami, then we're going to move on to some other stuff. He was mad about the Mike Miller thing when they amnestied Mike Miller. He was in the amnesty, Mike Miller, I believe.
Yes,
and they like, did. That drove him nuts because it's like it's
in Miami.
Mike was, yeah, in Miami, not in Cleveland, obviously, because Mike Miller was here in Denora, Cowboy as well. So Carter, before we kind of hit on the rotation stuff and then that Carmelo thing that that no one has talked about on Twitter at all, after the last 8 games, the 6 losses, how things have sort of played out, does your expectations for the team have they changed at all?
Nope.
Same. I just think that's worth saying.
Yeah, what's funny is like all of these problems, I've been doing hashtag regular season problems because they are. The Cavs aren't playing well for a couple reasons in my estimation, and feel free to tell me I'm an idiot if you disagree with any of them. I think some of their role players are slumping. They're not shooting as well as they were before. Kevin Love took like a 10% step back from his torrid pace to start the year. They aren't trying very hard. I think someone was tweeting yesterday that they have the worst transition defense in the league by like a long shot.
Which yeah, that is, that was Fuel Swords newest writer, Mike Zavangano. Zavangano.
Yeah.
I might have butchered his name.
Whatever it is.
He's going to be on the pod next week. I will learn how to say his name before then.
So like they have a terrible transition defense. So if teams run, they just get easy buckets because the Cavs don't try very hard. Like I know transition sometimes is a matter of effort of personnel and scheme, but I do not think that is really the case with this team. They comfortably should be getting back on D. And actually, I remember last year I was doing some research into how much Tristan Thompson's offensive rebounding keeps teams from going on fast breaks because they have to, you know, kind of help on him. And I was looking at each player, what the Cavs gave up in average fast break points when each player was on the floor. And Matthew Dellavedova was either 1 or 2. That guy was a hell of a transition defender because he was a tryhard. Like, tryhards are really good for transition defense. I guarantee you the Boston Celtics have a great transition defense. Like,
yeah,
it helps to have people who are running their asses off, not these old guys or stars or like the Cavs are probably missing some tryhards. So I don't think they're trying very hard. And then they don't have a lot of guys who can dribble. Now that's not a problem in the playoffs because for example, when LeBron runs out there with 4 bench guys right now, they're getting killed because teams are switching every action. with those guys, so they're not getting open. And LeBron in mid-January doesn't really have the energy to attack the switch like a madman every single possession, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
In the playoffs, he does, and he will. And you are screwed if you try to switch every action in the playoffs. But right now, it's not fair to ask him to expend that level of energy every single play and then also be the defensive anchor for those lineups because they have three minus defenders.
Right.
So all of these problems, for the most part, they go away. Like, effort, that gets fixed. Hopefully they're healthy. You know, you can't do anything about that. And slumping is not something that you consider a long-term problem. Guys are going to get back to shooting their percentages. And LeBron, and they're all going to try harder. So, and LeBron will have excess energy, and the Kyrie will have excess energy to expend. And so I'm not really worried about, even if they went to the playoffs with this roster, I really wouldn't be worried. But it would be nice to get one or two guys to help them get there more comfortably.
Yeah, you're right. I'm with you on that. I feel the same way. Nothing new to add there. So the other things we'll hit on real quick. First off, the rotations from Wednesday night's loss. Tyronn Lue kind of was trying some different stuff. I think there was a lot of sort of Twitter critiquing of this. Some of it I think is very fair. Some of it I think the context of the game makes it a little bit wonky. But, I mean, keeping Kyle Korver in for 20 minutes straight, not ideal.
That's some Joe Harris stuff. Like when David Blatt was so in over his head managing rotations, and he accidentally played Joe Harris the last like 25 minutes of a game against the Celtics.
Yeah. Again, Jordan McGrady didn't play a minute in this game. If you're wondering about how the James Jones minutes kind of fluctuate things, I think Jefferson sort of just would take those James Jones minutes.
Yeah,
like that's just how that worked. Was there anything that you particularly liked about the rotations Wednesday, or particularly disliked aside from the Korver stuff?
Well, I liked some of the Korver stuff. Like the fact that he was out there so long meant he got to run with the Cavs stars a little bit more.
And I will say this: I do like him. I almost like him starting.
I think I might too. I think I might be turning on this one.
It's not so much that I think he should be starting. It's more so that I think with the current roster and my current faith in Kay Felder to be a functional backup point guard, I almost rather just have Shump fill that role. And it's more natural.
I think
it's more natural coming off the bench. And I kind of like DeAndre Liggins. Like, he has his use. You can leverage him in the corners with other when he's on the floor with other guys. Like, I think you can make that work good enough where you can play him. And I think, because I think Liggins in a vacuum is more playable than Felder.
I think it's all personnel based, and I have noticed. Sorry, I'm dealing with a bit of a sinus infection, so
ditto.
My voice at some point.
Ditto.
I have noticed that, and I think this is a running trend. I think Lou has been more willing to run with Kay Felder against teams with really small point guards.
In my head that makes sense. I have to kind of check that out, but yeah.
I've just noticed games he gets run. I've noticed that really small point, like he's gotten run against the Magic when DJ Augustine's been out there. He got some run against the Celtics against Isaiah Thomas, which obviously didn't go well, but you know, whatever. He guarded Kemba for a little bit. Just these really like 6 foot 6'1" guards. It seems like Lou is more comfortable
going
running
way
him
back.
Out there.
He guarded Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And Paul, like, by some metrics, is a smaller point guard, even though he's, like, a 6-foot player. Yeah.
So I think that's part of the reason why he got run. Also, just experimenting. And I do appreciate the experimenting. I don't need every decision to work every game. I think that good coaches do stuff that with the long game in mind. So I'm fine with that. I thought Korver playing with the stars was kind of nice. Because I think my favorite thing about him playing with the stars is that the Cavs then stop running BS action for him with bench units. I am so sick of watching him run off four screens just to barely get open and fire one up. Like, he's not that kind of player anymore, I don't think.
I think there's some value to like him doing that stuff, but it has to be
as decoy
action. Like the second, yeah. Like, I think if the one thing I sort of am liking that they're doing a little bit of is you're having Kevin Love do more initiating, because Kyrie has struggled with it a little bit. Even in that Pelicans game, Like, there was like a thing late where Love was on a smaller guy and Kyrie just took a shot. I'm like, just give it to Love at that point. Like, you maximize the mismatch. Like, I think with Korver, if you're going to have Love kind of run stuff from the top of the key, LeBron post-ups and Korver running off screens are good ways to do that.
Yeah, I like Korver running off screens as long as he's not that's not the point of the play.
Right, like it's just to get him open. It's the safety valve. It's the thing that's, I guess, Kyrie is running a pick and roll on the other side of the floor. Korver is getting a screens informed by Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, because weak side action is really important. Yeah. It keeps teams, because if you run a LeBron or a Kyrie LeBron pick and roll on the left side and you've got Tristan setting a hammer screen for Korver on the other corner, then there's going to be no one to come help protect the rim.
Right.
So that stuff's good. I just don't like it when he's the primary target. So playing with the stars kind of like makes that just not a palatable option, so they stopped doing it. Honestly, it was weird. I think sometimes Lou gets stuck to these guns where it's like Shumpert like didn't play the last, 20 minutes of the game pretty much. Or they did a couple of small lineups. I don't know. I did like the Kyrie, Korver, Shumpert, LeBron, Love combo. I thought that was interesting. I don't know. It was just a weird game. But I think I saw a lot of Lou backlash. Like, he's not doing a good job this season. And I think that's a little ridiculous. I just think that the roster is weird in this roster. I mentioned this, I mean, much earlier in the season, I mentioned that this roster is not as well suited to just glide through a regular season because of the fact that they don't have the tryhards. I mean, yeah. How many guys do they have that, like, you just know are just going to go crazy with all-out effort every
Liggins.
Night? Liggins, Shumpert has pretty good effort. Thompson has really good effort.
Yeah.
It's not a lot. This is a finesse, skill-based team that, when they need to, are pretty freaking good when they all turn it on.
Yeah, I mean, like Richard Jefferson, when he gets real fired up, yes. Is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm just not really that worried, you know? Like, as I said at the beginning of the pod, I'm more annoyed because it's fun to watch the Cavs play good, and it's not fun to watch them play bad.
They're incredibly frustrating when they play bad, and we'll transition on this. Lou said after the game, quote, "We just gotta play better." Like, that was the lead of one of his quotes, and I was like, yeah.
That's what David Griffin said, too.
Yeah, like, they're not wrong. They're really not wrong. I think the minutes thing is troublesome. Like, I don't think LeBron playing 38 minutes is ideal. So I know you got to get going soon, so we're going to wrap it up on just a couple quick hitters here. The Carmelo stuff, just everyone know that the Cavs turned that down, and that's 100% the correct thing to do.
Yup.
Like, trading Kevin Love for Carmelo would be sort of a awful, awful deal for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Melo is old. He is paid a lot. His knees don't work very much anymore. He's the bad defender. He's not a very good rebounder. He's a good scorer still. That would probably look nice. It looked better than he does now. But the age is huge. Kevin Love is rent controlled for the next 4 years.
Kevin Love is like the apartment in the nice neighborhood that you have under control for on rent control. Carmelo's the one that apartment in the neighborhood that you thought was going to be trendy, and you just kind of committed to it for too long.
Yep, it's just not a good move. Maybe 2 years ago, I think the Cavs have to think about this a little harder. But Melo's having some drop off. I think he's 33 now.
Yeah, he is 33.
That's old.
He's actually 33, and unlike LeBron, who is like, I'm going to be 33 next winter, when he just turned 32 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
as a reminder.
Yeah, he's just a lot older, and it's not a good long-term move, and I'm not even sure it'd be a really good short-term move.
No, Kevin Love is better than Carmelo Anthony right now, and I think you could honestly argue that, like, over the course of their careers, Kevin Love is better. I think you could reasonably argue that.
Oh, this is a great tweet, if I can interrupt real quick. Chris Haynes just tweeted it.
Oh, boy.
This is the first time in LeBron James' career he'll be the oldest player on either All-Star roster at 32.
Time waits for no man.
That's crazy. There's always some old fart on the team.
Yeah.
And there's not one? That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, because it would have been Carmelo or Wade that would have been the guy, right?
Probably.
And neither of them got voted in, and they weren't going to get picked by the coaches, so.
How about that? Still, pretty wild. Yep, no Kobe's, no Duncan's, no Dirk's.
No, I mean, we're in the old man LeBron era. We're getting there. We really are. Yeah,
but 32 still is pretty young. I'd be interested to go back and look at, like, the last, like, 20 All-Star games and see what the oldest guy is, because 32 is not very old.
Right. 100% agree. Okay, then there's this other report that hasn't come from a guy real close to the team. It came from Mitch Lawrence of Forbes, that the Cavs were interested in three guys, Rondo, Jameer Nelson, who I will note, on another podcast, I incorrectly noted that. I believe I said he had a deal for three more years. I think it actually they could get out of it after the second year, so after next season. So I might be wrong on that. The vertical made it seem like it was a full thing, so I was wrong about that. I apologize. I will admit when I am wrong, because it is the honest and correct thing to do.
Wow.
Shh. The other name on there is Deron Williams. So three names there.
Is it Darren or Deron? I thought it's Darren now.
Dude, if I mispronounce it, I will culp to my mistakes again. I will culp to my mistakes. Real quick, I don't think any of those guys are, you know, perfect fits. I don't think any of them, we don't know exactly how likely those things would be. They would all be, unless Rondo gets bought out, you know, or something, or one of those guys that gets bought out, which I don't think Jameer would. And Deron is from Dallas and stuff. You got it. Let's just power rank them real quick. Who would those three guys, you put them in order, who would they be for you?
Williams, Nelson, nobody, Rondo.
Yeah.
I don't want Rajon Rondo near this team. I just don't. I admit it would be fascinating, because there's literally no better situation than the Cavs for someone like Rajon Rondo. But that doesn't mean that he's good for the Cat. Like the Cavs might be good for Rajon Rondo, but that wouldn't make Rajon Rondo good for the Cavs. I'm not interested. I would be fascinated, but I don't want to do it. I'm not interested in that. I think Deron Williams is the dream. He's still, like, a good player, which is, you know, I think people don't really realize that. Like, he's putting up 14-7 right now for, you know, the Mavs aren't great, but they're not the dumpster fire they looked like at the beginning of the season.
I think he's a victim of, he was a max player who we, at one point, basketball community collectively was wondering who was better, him or Chris Paul. Like, that was a debate. And then now where we are... is that he, you know, bombed out with the Nets, and he's now like a minimum, you know, $5 million guy or whatever. He's not like a high played player anymore.
Yeah, the thing about both Williams, and I will say this for Rondo, even though I don't really want him, is there's always just going to be more intrigue with guys who used to be great.
Yeah.
There is just that, like, because you see it when former great players, is that every now and again, they get it back for like 5 minutes, 3 minutes. These stretches where you're like, oh, there he is. There's that guy. And that is so fun when you get to see that happen, when they have a throwback game or a throwback quarter. And those can be really impactful and can, you know, sometimes swing playoff series.
Yeah. I think I would go Nelson. I know he is sort of frustrating at times, but I've watched a lot of Nuggets.
Nelson over Williams.
Yeah. Like Rondo Yeah, I just really like what he's done. And Matt Moore has kind of convinced me on him being a useful player for the Cavs. So
I'm surprised by that. I just feel like Nelson would feel like a little bit like Mo Williams did last year.
And I think he's actually got useful legs.
Well, that helps. I'm not saying he's bad. I'd rather have him than Rondo.
All right, let me ask you this. Would you, let's say you could pick, Williams is your top choice, would you take him or Chalmers?
Williams or Chalmers?
Yeah, you pick one of those two.
Williams.
Okay.
If Williams becomes available, he's the best option. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, I think Nelson's close, I guess, but I kind of
I think Williams is a tier above any other potential person. I just don't think they're going to buy him out.
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't think they will either. Here's the other thing. Would you rather have... Let's just rank these needs in order, and then we'll get out of here. Point guard, playmaker, And playmaker, you can interpret however you want. Wing, big man. And you have the one roster spot.
This is tough. Can I cheat a little bit?
Carter, you can always cheat on this podcast.
Okay.
As long as you own up to it and you know you admit that there is the caveat on what you're doing, that works.
Okay. Well, I'm going to cheat then. So what I want to do is I want to cut Birdman's salary.
I would have done that yesterday because it's dead weight at this point.
Yeah. I want to sign a replacement level big to get me through the regular season. And then I will put playmaker or point guard on equal footing. I think it's more likely that it ends up being a point guard because I think that the buyout market seems a little richer for those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're
about right. But I don't think it functionally is a big deal one way or the other.
I think
wing would be kind of nice just to have another body to throw out the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's Darren Williams, man, you know how you know I'm really dreaming Darren Williams dreams? I traded for him in 2K on my Cavs franchise mode. That's how you know.
Yeah, that's how you know.
I am dreaming big Darren Williams dreams. That guy's really good still, man.
Yeah.
Like, as far as, like, he would be their eighth or ninth best player. That's a really good ninth man.
Yeah, I would agree with that. My thing is that I kind of would like somebody who could take pressure of carrying so much of the burden off LeBron and Kyrie. That's kind of my biggest thing. And I don't care really how it comes. It's most likely to come as a point guard just because of the market and stuff.
Williams is still averaging 7 assists a game.
Yeah.
You don't think that he could do something on this Cavs team?
I think him, Nelson, or Chalmers would be fine.
That was a rhetorical question. Yeah. I wasn't suggesting that you actually thought.
I think one of those three guys would be fine. Stay away from Rajon Rondo. Just he's not good. He's the personality thing. It would be a disaster in just a bajillion ways. And again, I do think that like next year, this is going to be a really interesting thing to revisit a year from now, depending on what the Cavs do in the summer and how they approach the 17-man roster and two-way contract thing. Because I think that's like a way you can limit cost and still develop guys. Like it is setting you up to do that. And then this is the type of situation where having a guy, let's say the Cavs draft a wing in the second round this year. And I can't even remember if they have a second round pick at this point. Let's just say they have a pick.
Let's say they buy one.
Let's say they draft some wing, some 6'8 wing, no name wing, and they say, okay, you know, we're going to – you put him in Canton for most of your – that's close enough to Cleveland where he could still practice. And I believe that is okay as long as you can recall him and call him and stuff. You have him in Canton. You have him playing and starting there because you kind of control that. That's your organization. Like, they have their own staffs, but that is a Cavs-controlled organization. You can just have that – right now would be the perfect time to call up that guy and have him spend 3 weeks with your team. Have him play, rest LeBron – get his minutes down from 38 minutes a game. LeBron James probably should, like, we haven't even talked about this, but and it's just the last thing I think we need to hit on. LeBron James should not be leading the league in minutes at his age.
Nope.
Like, he is not old, but it's like he should not be playing this many minutes, and I think part of the reason he is because I need to watch tape and figure out why. Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving should not, like, have things just sort of fall apart when they are on the floor without LeBron. Like that.
Well, right now,
those two things should work.
Well, in fairness, right now they're falling apart with LeBron on the floor, and not those two.
That is also true.
Like, I mean, these LeBron bench plus bench units are getting wrecked. They have to figure that out in some way.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Or he's going to keep playing a ton of minutes.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Carter, thank you again for coming on the show, man. I think we took this is the longest pod I've done in a while, and it felt good to kind of get through a lot of this stuff. So thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, sorry it was a bummer, everyone. It's just not been a very fun stretch. I hope we've done a good enough job of reinforcing that we're not actually worried long term. And this is just, you know, the bumps and bruises that come with, you know, a bit of an older roster and a long season.
Yeah, in annual Cavs tradition to have some drama, to be honest.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, so what? Just so you guys know, I will have a show up on Saturday just because This week I didn't post a show every day like I normally would. Some of you pointed out the audio skipping issue. I think that is fixed now. It fixed my hard drive, and that should have cleaned it up a little bit. So hopefully, if you hear anything other skipping, email me and let me know. Just because I want to make sure you guys get your full dose of shows every week, I will do a Nets recap, especially because I think win or lose, that game is going to be kind of interesting. It sets up a Thunder game on Sunday, and I want to talk about the Thunder a little bit on Saturday, because I think talking about Russ and LeBron is a fascinating thing. But I'm going to talk about that game on Saturday morning, probably go up about noon or so. And then we will, again, be back to 5 days a week next week. I'm going to get back in the flow of everything. I apologize for the little breaks. Drop those mailbag questions to LockedOnCavs or on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Already got a couple for next week. Had so many great ones this past week. So make sure you get those in. And so for myself, for Carter Rodriguez, this has been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you again on Saturday.